Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day and welcome to the Beneficiary Satisfaction Survey Briefing Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Melanie Porter, Senior Advisor with Social Security. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to everyone, and thank you for joining our 2015 Beneficiary Satisfaction Survey Briefing. My name is Melanie Porter. I'm a senior advisor within the Office of Beneficiary Outreach and Employment Support. And today we are pleased to share with you the findings from our survey and also discuss the latest report cards that were posted to our website. Before I do turn it over to Maximus, Mike Greenberg will be presenting the analysis and the findings from the report. I do just want to mention a couple of things. First, we received a lot of questions from all of you wondering if the 2015 reference was a mistake. It is not. I know we are in 2017, but because this survey was fielded and we did all of the analysis beginning early in 2016, the data that we actually have is from beneficiaries who had either assigned or unassigned their tickets in 2015. So that's where that reference comes from. Also, another question that we've gotten from a lot of you is whether or not we're open to taking suggestions for the next survey or looking at different ways that we may improve it. And what we wanted to let you all know is that due to some budget limitations that we had for this calendar year, we were unable to include it as part of the work that Maximus performs for us. And so whether or not we'll be able to do this next year or even in subsequent years, that is still TBD. So with all of that being said, there will be an opportunity at the end of the presentation, possibly throughout the presentation, for you to ask questions. But before we open it up for that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Mike Greenberg. Mike, go ahead.
Thank you, Mel. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mike Greenberg, Ticket Program Senior Specialist with Maximus, the Ticket Program Manager. Before we begin, I want to thank Social Security for affording us this opportunity to present the findings of the 2015 Beneficiary Satisfaction Survey to you, the Employment Network audience. I also want to recognize the contributions of our partners, JBS International, with whom we collaborated throughout the survey process. Let's move on to slide 2. Here's an overview of what we plan to cover today. We will present the purpose, the methods, and the quantitative and qualitative results of the 2015 Beneficiary Satisfaction Survey, along with our top-line conclusions. We'll also explain how the EN report card is developed and how it's presented online. If you're familiar with the question feature, comment feature of the on the site, feel free to post your questions as they arise. You know, as Melanie said, we may stop from time to time and, you know, collect ourselves and answer some of those questions, but we will also offer opportunities at the end of the presentation for you to ask questions. Let's move on to slide 3. The purpose of the Beneficiary Satisfaction Survey is to periodically assess ticket beneficiaries or their representative payees' satisfaction with the services and supports they receive from their employment network. The results of the survey allow Social Security to gauge the needs and expectations of beneficiaries in order to effectively tailor the services being provided by ENs, as well as to publish the survey satisfaction results via the program's Choose Work website. And this posting, this information helps beneficiaries make informed choices in selecting an EN. And this would be beneficiaries who either have an EN and are looking to change ticket assignments to another EN, or beneficiaries who are considering entering the program and are now looking for their first employment network to choose. Let's move on to slide 4. Briefly, what I'll do next is review the process we followed to develop, execute, and report the results of the survey. Slide 5. It took about 18 months from survey development to final report. Work began in February 2016, and the first task was to develop the questions and design and format the questionnaire. Typically, from one survey year to the next, we consult with Social Security, and we'll get suggestions for new questions to raise in the survey. We'll also get suggestions based on the performance of previous questions as to whether we should modify those questions. Once we have the initial draft of the questions in place, we conduct in-depth interviews and we conducted focus groups with people with disabilities to cognitively test the survey. And this would have been maybe repeat items as well as new survey items. We do this to ensure that the questions are generally understood and thought to mean the same thing to prospective users. We also, at this point, build an online survey system, and we test that site to ensure that this online system collects data and will export it correctly. Next, we move on to construct the survey sample. To do this, we first stratified the EN population by size of EN. As many of you know, we have quite a diversity of employment networks in terms of size. We do the stratification at three levels. One, large ENs, and we define those ENs as those that had 151 or more beneficiaries with tickets assigned. We have a group of mid-sized ENs, and we set that definition at 31 to 150 beneficiaries with tickets assigned. And then we have the small ENs with 10 through 30 beneficiaries. Once we do that stratification, we randomly sample the pool of beneficiaries with tickets assigned, as well as beneficiaries who had unassigned their tickets during the survey period. There were approximately 13,800 beneficiaries were randomly sampled from large ENs, about 9,200 from mid-sized ENs, and about 2,300 from small ENs. And then the sample of beneficiaries who had unassigned their tickets numbered 4,375. Then we move into the data collection phase, and that phase actually began in September 2016. We initiated that task by first sending a postcard in an envelope. We send this notice to respondents inviting them to complete the survey online. To those who did not choose to respond at that point, we then mailed paper questionnaires. We did this twice to non-responders. And non-responders at that point still had the option to go online and complete the survey or to return it in the envelope provided, the postage paid envelope provided, and mail it in. Once the survey is fielded and the data comes in, we enter into our data analysis and reporting phase. At that point, we begin to analyze the quantitative data. The survey questionnaire, there were 30 questions that sought quantitative information. And we, in reviewing that data, we applied various statistical tests to ensure that the distribution of the results were within normal limits and didn't show any unusual patterns. Once we were assured that we had good data, we tested the difference between various data sets to see which of those data differences were statistically meaningful. The survey has one qualitative survey question. And for that question, we asked for open-ended comments. And we coded those comments and used special software to perform an analysis of that content. And that software analysis allows us to identify certain themes that exist throughout these multiple responses. Having our quantitative results in hand and having our qualitative data in hand, we then began to write the report. And the process of writing the report actually occurred over several months, during which we exchanged multiple drafts with Social Security, received their feedback, and in return, received their feedback in return, and then we added graphics for visual effects, and then finally produced the final report on August 20th, 2017. Let's move on to slide 6. From here, I'm going to go over the quantitative results, and they were quite extensive, so please feel free to interject with any questions as we move through the slides. No need to wait till the end, although, as I said, we'll give you a chance at the end to ask that question. All right, moving to slide 7. Who responded to the survey? A total of 6,342 beneficiaries across 372 employment networks responded to the survey. That's a response rate of 21.4%. Of those total respondents, 85% were beneficiaries with tickets assigned, 15% were beneficiaries who had unassigned their tickets in 2015. Just a note, I want to reiterate something I mentioned earlier. Beneficiary representative payees could also respond to the survey on behalf of the beneficiary. And, of course, we put into place quality checks to make sure that beneficiary rep payees and beneficiaries themselves were not duplicating and responding, you know, on behalf of the same employment network. So as we go through these results, unless I say otherwise, beneficiaries, the term beneficiaries, are going to refer to both assigned and unassigned beneficiaries. You will see statements on the slides that refer to these groups separately. But if I don't say it, then consider them joined. The first question we asked was, do you ever receive services from an employment network? 26% of the people responding said they never received services. Well, we thought this data point was inordinately high, and we actually spent some time trying to understand, well, perhaps what's going on here. Might it actually reflect a misunderstanding of the survey question? I mean, it could mean that the beneficiary had his or her ticket assigned, but never actually received services from an employment network. We know that can happen in situations where a ticket is assigned to a beneficiary, where the ticket is assigned and the EN operates a consumer-directed services model, where perhaps no services are ever provided. However, only one CDSEN was included in the respondent sample, so we knew that that alone would not account for 26%. It's also plausible that the beneficiary's EN arranged for services to be provided by another source, and thus the services were not actually received from that EN. Well, we did test this question during cognitive interviews, and we didn't encounter any issues worth noting. However, when we spoke to some respondents who called the survey hotline, and we did get calls throughout the survey fielding period, they often needed reminders and examples of what an EN is. In order to know if they had worked with one. So it's entirely possible that some of the 26 percenters really didn't understand who their EN was, nor that they had worked with one, nor that the core services that they had actually received had come from their EN. I'm sorry to say we never actually concluded that we knew the real source of this response. And so we decided that we would include this data point in the report, even though the response may have been an error or a misunderstanding. And we're really spending the time right now discussing it because I think in the spirit of transparency, you know, we really want to let folks know this was the data point. There may be some things going on, and that 26%, you know, may not be exactly what it appears. But that is the data point we got, and we decided, all right, we're going to keep it in the report. But I'm going to let folks know that we do have some concerns around it. I hope that works for everybody. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to slide 8. So we asked folks, how did you, we asked folks, why did you stop receiving services from an employment network? Most common responses were that folks stopped because of their disability or a health issue, or they stopped because their EN was unable to find them a job. Other reasons, however, one out of every five respondents gave us a reason, you know, that fell in the category of other, and we've laid out some of the examples of those others on the slide itself. Again, I wasn't happy with my EN. I stopped receiving services because I was worried about losing my SSI or SSDI. I was worried about losing my Medicare or Medicaid. I had some transportation issues. Nearly 5% of respondents said that was the reason that they stopped receiving services. I decided not to work at this time. My EN decided not to work with me. I wasn't happy with the job my EN found. Or, and in a very few number of instances, less than 2%, my EN is no longer was in business. The slide on the right, we asked folks, how do you usually communicate with your EN? Phone was the most popular, followed by in-person or walk-in. There were other options. People communicated with their EN by postal snail mail. People chiefly communicated with them by text messages, and some fax machine was their principal mode of communication. Let's go to slide 9. Next, we asked, how many ENs did you contact before selecting one? A majority of respondents did not contact any other employment networks before making their choice. And so next we ask people, well, why did you select this EN? Over a quarter of respondents indicated that it was the knowledge and approachability of the staff, that they were easy to talk to, that convinced them that this was the right EN for them. Proximity was also a big reason. This was an EN closest to, to where they live. And this is why, better than one out of five selected an EN based on location. All right. We're going to move to slide 10 now. Beginning with slide 10, we start to dive into the actual satisfaction questions. The 2015 ticket survey used 8 questions to assess beneficiary satisfaction with their EN. Each question asked respondents to rate their level of satisfaction as either satisfied, neither satisfied, nor dissatisfied, or dissatisfied. If you look to the slide, you'll see down the left-hand column the actual questions themselves. In terms of how satisfied were you with how your EN respected me, with how my EN supported me. What was my overall satisfaction? Overall satisfaction was a standalone question. The data was not derived from the responses to the other questions. How satisfied was I with my EN's understanding about the types of jobs I want? Satisfaction with the information my EN gave me about available jobs in my community. Satisfaction with the EN, my EN gave me about resources to reach my employment goals. My EN's ability to help me reach my employment goals and my EN's ability to help me reach my financial goals. Focusing now on the slide itself, overall, half of all beneficiaries were satisfied with their EN, while less than a quarter indicated that they were dissatisfied overall. Beneficiaries reported the highest level of satisfaction with how their EN respected them, followed by how their EN supported them. Now, we know from our lengthy experience in the ticket program that these top two items, respect and support, are among the most difficult qualities to build in an organization, to build among your staff. And those ENs whose efforts drove these results should really be proud. Beneficiaries reported the highest levels of dissatisfaction with their EN's ability to help them reach their financial goals and their EN's ability to help them reach their employment goals. Let's move to slide 11. These questions dealt with goals for the money you earned. Beneficiaries were asked how much they agreed with two statements about their goal for the money that they earned from employment. They were first asked their level of employment with this statement. My goal is to use the money I earn from working to replace some of the money I receive from Social Security. Respondents were then asked for their level of agreement with the statement. My goal is to use the money I earn from working to replace all of my Social Security cash benefits. So we have two levels of agreement, some of the money, all of the money. Fewer beneficiaries agreed that they wanted to replace all of their benefits compared to wanting to replace some of their benefits. And if we look at the results based on ticket assignment status, and that will be the slide to the right on slide 11, the graph to the right on slide 11, if we look at those results based on ticket assignment status, we see that assigned beneficiaries were more likely to replace some or all of their benefits than said unassigned beneficiaries. All right. Let's move to slide 12. Slide 12 shows responses to the question, please tell us what is good, fair, or bad about your employment network. We measured 10 characteristics plus an other option. So a total of 11 characteristics were rated. You'll see those characteristics on the slide, on the graph on the right on slide 12. We measured the characteristics of physical accessibility, business hours, information provided in accessible format, and these could be large print, Braille. We measured staff knowledge, the characteristic of my EN's understanding about the types of jobs I want. We measured the level of staff support, the characteristic of my EN on how quickly staff return phone calls or my emails, the characteristic of time waiting for follow-up services, the characteristic of help with job search, local job information, and my EN's ability to help me reach my financial goals. Per bullet one on the left, the positive takeaway here is that 7 of the 11 characteristics were rated by a majority of respondents as good. Tangible job-related aspects, such as job search help and information about local jobs, tended to be rated the worst or the lowest. A higher percentage of beneficiaries with tickets assigned rated every characteristic as good than did the corresponding unassigned beneficiaries. A higher percentage of unassigned beneficiaries rated every characteristic as bad than did beneficiaries with their tickets assigned. Well, there doesn't need to be a lot of explanation as to why that occurred. These were, after all, beneficiaries who decided to unassign their tickets. So we're comparing them against a group of beneficiaries who decided to stay with their EN. So we know that there's, you know, what's going on, you know, in the background here is a level of dissatisfaction in most cases. The good news is that all of the characteristics surveyed improved over the 2014 survey edition. The most improvement were in the areas of business hours, staff support, how quickly staff return phone calls. Examples of ratings in the good category, where other was selected, those examples included the EN's helpfulness and friendliness, support or encouragement, personal attention, and resourcefulness. Examples of bad characteristics or characteristics rated as bad were in the areas of understanding of job needs, providing job listings, keeping the beneficiaries informed, and providing needed equipment, such as computers or headsets. Let's turn to slide 13. In this section of the survey, we provided beneficiaries with a list of 9 services and asked for each, 1, if they initially wanted that service, 2, if they received that service, and 3, if they didn't receive the service, if they hoped to receive that service in the future. They were essentially asked 3 questions for each service, and they could select yes or no for each one. Most wanted was help finding a job and job planning. Most received or most declared as received was help understanding how having a job can affect benefits and building a resume. Most hoped for, in other words, beneficiaries, services that were wanted but not yet received, the most hoped for service was help getting services from other organizations and help learning a skill. For the majority of services, respondents reported lower rates of receiving them than wanting them. So here, there seems to be a gap in what beneficiaries wanted versus what they actually received. But I want to emphasize that this gap existed at the time they responded for the survey. So, you know, and that's a point that, you know, I want to make is that, you know, the survey is a point in time. Circumstances can change, and services which were hoped for in the future may in fact have materialized after the survey was fielded and after beneficiaries responded. Let's move to slide 14. Slides 14, 15, 16, and 17 present survey findings as they involve beneficiary employment. Let's start with slide 14. 47% of respondents reported that they are employed. 53% were unemployed. Among those who said they are working, over 3/4 were working 30 hours a week or less. Now, we reference 30 hours a week several times throughout the survey and the report because the Affordable Care Act defines full-time work as 30 hours or more per week. So in other words, though they're working, over 3/4 are working in what we would call part-time work. The majority of working beneficiaries made between $6 and $10. The average hourly wage was $11.99. Move to slide 15. Next, we looked at annual salaries within the context of SGA and trial work level. On average, employed beneficiaries made $15,555 per year. So we used those annual salaries to calculate whether or not they met the 2016 monthly thresholds for substantial gainful activity and trial work level. Trial work, SGA varies, of course, for blind or non-blind beneficiaries, but we didn't have disability data at the time we evaluated the survey, so we used the non-blind value for data analysis purposes. The 2016 monthly non-blind SGA amount we used was $1,130. Within that context, 87% of working beneficiaries made less than SGA. In 2016, any month in which earnings exceeded $810, that's the 2016 trial work level, was was considered a month of services for an individual's trial work period. 72% of beneficiaries made less than the trial work level. Okay. Let's move to slide 16. We wanted to understand if ENs helped their respondents. So we asked two questions to those beneficiaries who were currently employed. Did your EN help you get your current job? And then, secondly, did your EN help you keep your current job? The majority of beneficiaries, almost two-thirds, reported that their EN did not help them get their current job. Looking at the chart on the right, we can see that slightly more beneficiaries indicated that their EN helped them keep their current job. However, a majority still reported that they did not receive this type of support from their EN. Let's move to slide 17. So we asked beneficiaries several questions about working 30 hours a week or more. Again, that's full-time work under as defined by the ACA. The graph on your left shows that almost two-thirds of beneficiaries have worked 30 hours a week or more at some point in their life. So we asked them, did you ever work 30 hours or more per week? And then we asked them, well, if you haven't, are you interested in working more than 30 hours a week? So again, the graph on the left shows that almost two-thirds of beneficiaries have ever worked 30 hours a week or more in their life, while the graph in the middle shows that 56% still have an interest in working 30 hours or more a week. So for those who are currently working less than full-time status, we asked what were their reasons for not working more hours. 28% reported health or disability reasons. 14% cited a physical disability issue. 1 in 5 gave us another reason for not working more hours. And here are some examples of other reasons. They included that they were spending time attending school or training classes. Some individuals reported being over age 65, and were at the point where they were losing their ticket eligibility. Some reported that they had already lost their Social Security benefits because of work. Some had said they had already lost their health care because of work. Some reported they were choosing to volunteer instead of or in addition to working. Some said that they were giving self-employment a try. Some reported they were working seasonal work. Some said that they were caring for a family member. Some said that they were that they had asked for more hours, but were turned down by their employers, and they framed this response from their employer as discrimination from their employer. You have a question?
Sure do. What were the parameters that helped them get a job?
Excellent question. We didn't set any parameters in the survey. That's the answer to the question. In a nutshell, we didn't give the respondent any leads as to how help might be defined. And it'll be interesting as we move forward in the survey, and we talk more particularly now about the qualitative, we start to learn a little more about what's behind some of these answers. But as for that particular question, it is what it is. In the mind of the beneficiary, whatever help was, their particular EN didn't rise to the occasion of help. I hope that answers your question. It is the best I can do on this one. All right. We're not going to talk about the qualitative results of the survey. So let's go to the next slide, slide 19. So beneficiaries were asked to add any additional information they wanted to share with Social Security. I can tell you from previous years in the survey, this has really been a very informative avenue. And many people take advantage of this opportunity. You know, in spite of the fact that, you know, we have so many quantitative questions that delve very deeply into measures of satisfaction and try to delve pretty deeply into, you know, their experience in the program, beneficiaries find that this part of the survey, these open-ended questions, give them that opportunity to really speak their mind and have their say their piece. And this year was no different. Just under 50% of respondents responding to the survey elected to share that information. In this open-ended format, we received a total of 3,021 quotes. That's a 47%, you know, response rate. And those quotes were from both beneficiaries with tickets assigned and beneficiaries from tickets who had unassigned their tickets. The 3,021 quotes broke down as 2,525 quotes from beneficiaries with tickets assigned and 496 quotes from beneficiaries with tickets unassigned. All right, let's look first at the positive experiences. This is slide 20. Many beneficiaries took this opportunity to make very positive comments about their ENs. So when we break them down into specific themes, we talk first about communication as a theme of the comment. You know, before I get into the communications one, you know, we'll take note on the slides that many positive comments were received around staff willingness to help beneficiaries, staff responsiveness to beneficiary contact attempts, assistance to get a beneficiary set up with the ticket program. We got comments that were with respect to job placement or job skills that were acquired in the course of their participating in the program. Beneficiaries who found a job or have begun taking training or other steps to obtain a job. All of this as a result of the ticket program. So let's talk about comments along the theme of communication. Many survey participants expressed appreciation for their EN's good communication. They described staff members as responsive and encouraging, communicating with them effectively and timely, both during the process of getting employed and afterward. Examples of positive comments around employment placement. Beneficiaries discuss their appreciation for the ticket program and their EN's help in helping them find employment. Again, about positive comments around staff support. Many respondents indicated that they liked the support that their EN provided in terms of answering calls, responding to emails, meeting in person with the beneficiary. They appreciated the helpfulness of the EN staff. In terms of obtaining employment, participants reported that their ENs were both responsive, supportive, and provided guidance that ultimately led to their obtaining a job. Training for beneficiaries. Positive comments regarding that ENs provided skill building and job attainment support. Some of the skills ENs helped beneficiaries obtain included computer skills and resume development, continuing education courses, GED courses, and other training programs. And in terms of positive comments around the ability to navigate the ticket program and navigating Social Security and benefits, beneficiaries described receiving helpful guidance and information about their EN around wage reporting, and help supportive help throughout the process of becoming employed, particularly if explaining disability information, addressing their concerns about losing their SSDI and SSI benefits, and helping them overall navigate the system of reporting their wages. You'll notice that the bullets also have little asterisks associated with them. These same themes we'll find over in what we've labeled as challenges. In other words, they're negative comments that in the area of communication, employment placement, staff support, training for beneficiaries, and the ability to navigate the ticket program and navigate the impact of employment on benefits. So speaking of challenges, let's move to slide 21, and we'll talk about some of the challenges that beneficiaries reported in these open-ended comments with their ENs. And many of these negative comments also focused around their staff. Lack of support or knowledge, as well as beneficiary discontent with their job-related outcomes. Several commented that their ENs didn't find them appropriate jobs or didn't find them any jobs at all. There was also a lot of confusion around the logistics of the ticket program, how to enroll, responsibilities of beneficiaries, particularly in the area of responsibilities to report earnings, and reporting instances where the tickets were perhaps were unassigned by their beneficiary, by their employment network. I'm sorry. And of course, as we did on the prior slide, we have a little comment bubble up on the slide to show, you know, a full quote to give you a flavor of some of the positive comments that we've that were, you know, we repeat in toto, and some of the challenges or the negative comments that we received. Let me go over briefly some of the negatives in terms of the areas of communication. Beneficiaries reported that when they reached out to their ENs often failed to contact them or follow up when promised, or they had slow response time. Beneficiaries reported difficulties locating or identifying telephone numbers for their EN, as many of their ENs moved around a lot, according to the beneficiary, or they didn't post direct telephone numbers on their websites. In the area of employment placement, where they were working with an EN that did not help them obtain employment, we often receive negative comments, and comments that the beneficiary, to the effect that the beneficiary was more successful finding employment on their own. Beneficiaries often responded that beneficiaries, that the jobs that ENs offered were of poor quality or located too far away. In the area of staff support, beneficiaries responded that ENs were often unhelpful in supporting their employment search efforts, specifically by not listening to the beneficiary's needs or helping them find the type of work that they wanted or they felt they were physically able to do. Employed beneficiaries also reported a lack of advocacy from their EN when issues of job accommodations arose. In areas of training, beneficiaries reported they felt a need for ENs to offer more in the areas of education, training, and opportunities for job placement. They indicated a need for ENs to offer job skills programs or work skills training, training on interviewing, for example, training on resume writing, and having more in-depth discussions over setting career goals. There was also confusion reported about the ticket program and reconciling with Social Security benefits. Beneficiaries indicated that it was difficult to get information about reimbursement from their ENs. I presume these were situations where a beneficiary was working with a CDS or another EN who had promised some level of reimbursement for costs incurred. They also indicated a need for assistance and information regarding pay stub submission and other necessary documentation. This particular comment reinforces the need to follow up with beneficiaries around issues of wage reporting and provide clients with written online guidance or direct assistance on how to report their wages. Now, we know from conversations with ENs that a lot of ENs have this conversation with their beneficiary. But I think these open-ended comments indicate that you really can't talk about it enough. Reinforcement time and again has to be done. Insofar as the EN's location, beneficiaries reported a lack of ENs in their local area. And we heard this often from ENs, you know, who said that they lived in rural locations. The challenge, they said, were that in many cases, ENs were up to two states away. Specific challenges were reported about having to work with ENs in remote locations, including the EN's lack of knowledge of the beneficiary's local area, the types of employers and jobs that are available in their local areas, as well as the lack of access to local job information. We had beneficiaries reporting a lack of jobs where accommodations were available. Commenters reported that ENs did not offer enough job options that met the array of unique needs of individuals with disabilities. For example, and these are from quotes from the beneficiaries, accommodating individuals with sleep disorders or hearing loss, limb loss, mental health issues, individuals with non-visible disabilities, one specific, epilepsy. There was also a desire for job options that would support working from home. For example, data entry positions, medical coding positions, and provide the necessary equipment in order to work at home, computers, direct access to the internet. Other participants reported a need for office jobs that do not require long period standing or positions that don't require social interaction. And in terms of the perceived competence of the EN staff, beneficiaries reported that staff were unable to assist them in obtaining employment that accommodated their disability, or beneficiaries who were seeking self-employment reported that the EN staff was ill-prepared or unwilling to provide assistance or guidance on how to obtain self-employment. Any questions? Even positive comments, if you want to make reference.
There's a lot of chatter going on, but any complaints around not receiving interpreter services?
Uh, We did not call them out in our analysis.
Right.
We do know, and I won't say interpreter services, will we be looking for particularly beneficiaries deaf or hard of hearing in that particular case, whoever's asking the question? ASL. Very good. Okay. We could do a deeper dive and see. It's not something that we called out, as a top line finding, but we can certainly look, do a deeper dive into the data and see if the lack of availability of ASL services was a concern expressed. Be glad to do that. All right. Yeah. Good question, though. Thank you. Good chatter, Phil.
I have a question.
Okay, we do have a question. We'll take a moment.
This is Carol Cohen. How are you?
Hey, Carol. Good. How are you? Thanks.
I have a question. So when they say that they don't have enough accommodation, for example, maybe interpreting and so forth, do you know if they're also talking about certain types of assistive technologies that – that they're referring to that are not available or they're not being advised about, or are we missing the boat on that?
Well, I don't think I can tell you. What I can tell you is the beneficiary is reporting a disconnect, between their need and what they see the EN, providing. Or in terms of advocacy for these services.
And referral to
exactly.
Organizations that could support them with acquiring assistive technology. I wonder if we need to do more of that.
What we're finding here is that, we're getting these type of concerns. The beneficiary may not be understanding that the EN may not be the source of all of these, accommodation support. Again, this may in effect be a communication issue. It may be an issue where, just a statement of dissatisfaction. It may be an issue where the beneficiary, is perhaps using the survey as a method to convey, dissatisfaction, but perhaps was not, being enough of a self-advocate, when the circumstance arose. That's the short answer. Well, it's a long answer to a short question. But I think, if what we can do is to better educate ENs on the availability of if to do more to educate ENs on the availability of sources for assistive technologies in the workplace, thought, that we can take back.
Might be a good idea to give them a little bit more information. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the question. We have a question in the chat box about the availability of slides. Yes, the slides will be made available. It'll be take about a week to make the slides available. Mel, I'm going to flip this one to you. Are we going to alert ENs when the slides are available?
For that one, we usually post them to the website as soon as they're remediated. So, whether we send out a gov delivery announcement to notify people or just request that they check back. Mike, we haven't gotten that far, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I would suggest keep checking back. How's that? And then check your inbox because you may get a notice as well. Is that fair, Mel?
That sounds good.
All right. Thanks. All right. Our last area of open-ended questions, and we're running close to time, had to do with Social Security and ticket program considerations. I want to continue to save some time for questions at the end. But the kind of comments that fell into this box were fear of losing government benefits, confusion over Social Security rules regarding reporting of employment income, confusing information about submitting pay stubs. I cannot say enough about how often beneficiaries reported through the survey concerns and confusion around the reporting of income, how to report the income, whose responsibility it is to report the income. And I can only say I know ENs spend a substantial amount of time having this conversation, you know, putting responsibility where it rests, but at the same time, it's clear from the survey and the open-ended responses here that this message is not, you know, being heard. So I would just reemphasize the notion that, you know, it is confusing, and we all know that overpayments that result from failure to report are the number one killer of jobs. That being said, we had some issues, you know, regarding particularly from people who had unassigned their tickets, confusion over how to unassign their ticket. And again, more and more comments regarding the need for good information about the effect of benefits, the effect of employment on benefits, further comments regarding the need for benefits counseling. We see this time and again in these open-ended comments. And then finally, concerns around the ticket program goal. Respondents reported challenges about the ability of professionals to re-enter the workforce. Beneficiaries with degrees and specialized qualifications indicated that the ticket program wasn't designed to help them because help them find employment because they were being offered jobs that did not align with their qualifications. Moving to slide 23, we did get some comments regarding specific that were really not, you know, not across the board, but rather very much limited beneficiaries. We had beneficiaries expressing concerns about finding employment where they had a past criminal history. Beneficiaries talked about, you know, not finding jobs that aligned with the limitations placed on their disability or health. A lot where people expressed dissatisfaction about their current employment situation, they often responded, in the survey at this point. And then transportation needs came up in this area. Challenges with transportation often hindered beneficiaries' ability to work. The cost of transportation related expenses, gas, car payments, taxi fares, the need for modified cars due to their disability, the time associated with the use of public transportation often made it difficult for beneficiaries to get to work or to meet up with their EN. To this extent, beneficiaries reported a need for help to meet these transportation challenges, help either having ENs provide for or arrange for transportation assistance would be a benefit. All right, we're on slide 24, and then we're going to move to slide 25 talk about the conclusions we reached at the end of the day after having reviewed all the qualitative and quantitative results. Beneficiaries reported high satisfaction with their ENs, with notable exception of the job-related services that their EN provides. More specifically, ENs need to do a better job understanding their clients' unique employment needs and to identify job placement opportunities that fit those needs. We found that much confusion exists around the ticket program design, implementation, rules, and regulations. Beneficiaries do not consistently appear to understand the ticket program's purpose. A disconnect exists on the goals of the program. Only about 37% of respondents reported wanting to replace some of their benefits, and even fewer, 24%, wanted to replace all of their benefits. And beneficiaries continue to need better information on how the ticket program provides a time period in transitioning from Social Security and other benefits to their reliance on earning from work. Well, that's it for the results of the survey. We want to spend a few minutes talking about your EN report card. And as Charlie Brown says, happiness is a good report card. All right. Beginning with slide 27, let's review how the EN report card is developed. First, which ENs get a report card? In the 2015 survey, every EN for which at least 10 beneficiaries with tickets assigned responded received a report card. So if you were serving fewer than 10 beneficiaries, you were not going to get a report card because you were never going to meet that threshold of 10 beneficiaries. If you were serving more than 10 and 10 or more responded, then you were going to be on the list to have your report card developed and published. The report card is published on the Choose Work site at the Find Help section. A total of 142 ENs met that reporting threshold. And their report card shows scores for each of the 8 satisfaction questions that appear on slide 27. In other words, you'll get a score for overall satisfaction, satisfaction with how my EN supported me, satisfaction with how my EN respected me, satisfaction with the information my EN gave me about available jobs in my community, satisfaction with the EN, which my EN gave me about other resources or organizations to help me reach my employment goals, satisfaction with my EN's ability to help me reach my employment goals, satisfaction with my EN's ability to help me reach my financial goals, and satisfaction with my EN's ability, my EN's understanding of the type of jobs I want. Let's move to slide 28. Beneficiaries rated each of these 8 satisfaction measures as satisfied. That gives you a score, a value of 3. Neither satisfied nor dissatisfied. That gives you a value of 2. Or dissatisfied. That's a value of 1. Then we determine the total average score for a satisfaction measure across all ENs by calculating the mean of the response values. That's the 1, 2, and 3. For all beneficiaries who answered that question. So the result is an all EN average. Then we determine the average score for a satisfaction measure for an individual EN. Again, calculating the mean of those response values, the 1, 2, and 3. But that's done only for beneficiaries from that EN. What that gives you is the individual EN average. And then finally, we calculate the relative percentage between the all EN average and the individual EN average. And that we do that to determine what percentage above or below the all EN average the individual EN average was positioned. So what do we do with that information? Well, moving to slide 29, we translate that percentage into an index score with 100 as its base. We use these index scores to better compare one EN score to that of all the other ENs. The index score of each satisfaction question indicates the relative position of an EN compared to all other ENs. The number of responses associated with each EN has no bearing on that index score. The index score is calculated using the same method in this year's edition of the survey as we've done in all past satisfaction surveys. So if you see changes in your index score from one survey edition to another, it's not because, you know, we moved the cheese on you, as it were. All right. Let's look at slide 30. So here's how you can interpret an index score. We use an index score to show how the EN's average score for the survey questions compare to the national average score. The average of all beneficiaries across all ENs is 100. Index scores lower than 100 indicate lower levels of satisfaction, while index scores above 100 indicate higher levels of satisfaction. Let's go to slide 31. So here's how we report these index scores. Here's how to interpret an index score for each of the 8 satisfaction questions. If the individual EN average equals the all EN average, then an index score is 100. If the individual EN average is 10 points above the all EN average, then its index score is 110. If the individual EN average is 5 points below an all EN average, then its index score is 95. All right, so if an individual EN index score is greater than or equal to 110, then the score is labeled excellent. If it's greater than 90 but less than 110, then the score is labeled good. If the EN's index score is less than or equal to 90, then the score is labeled fair. And we use the excellent, good, fair really for the benefit of the reader, because just a given number isn't going to be as meaningful as, oh, I get it, you're good, you're fair, you're excellent. People understand that sort of demarcation. So it's really for the consumer's benefit that we define those differences in index scores into 3 categories: excellent, good, and fair. And if we move to slide 32, you can see how we portray them on the website. I'll review the process because it does get, you know, a little complicated by this point. Column 1, the individual EN score, is derived by calculating the mean of the response values only for beneficiaries from that EN. Column 2, the national average. Well, the national average is derived by calculating the mean of the response values for all beneficiaries who answered that question. We calculate the relative percentage between the national average and the individual EN average to determine what percentage above or below the national average that individual EN score is positioned. Then we translate that percentage into a national average EN score with 100 as its base. If the individual EN's index score is greater than or equal to 110, the score is labeled excellent. If it's greater than 90 and less than 110, the score is labeled good. If the EN's index score is less than or equal to 90, and the score is labeled fair. We're now at slide 33, and that ends our presentation. We're going to pause, and I'm going to give the remaining time, which is about 15 minutes or so, for the operator for any questions they may have. If you know, you're shy, and I haven't met too many ENs that are shy. And you don't feel like asking the question, you know, in front of the group, feel free to post your question in the chat box, and we will, deal with them. Again, thank you very much for your attendance. Thanks for allowing us to share the results of the 2015 Beneficiary Satisfaction Survey with you. I'm going to sign off. Mel, operator, questions?
Thank you, Leanne. Can you please cue the instructions for questions?
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from John Duplessis with Self-Sufficiency Through Employment.
Yes, I thought you did a great job with the ratings and the scoring and so forth. But one of the issues, and I'm pretty sure many other ENs have the same issue, is that losing contact information with the consumers. You know, you try to have alternate numbers and so forth and try to make contact with them, but sometimes, you know, their numbers change, they move or something, and you're not able to make contact with them. And that's one of the biggest issues that we have with a lot of our consumers is being able to make contact with them. And I'm pretty sure other ENs may have the same problem. But I thought that that should be a question maybe in the survey, is that how well is it that your EN is able to reach you or something in that format. Thank you.
Excellent question. So if any folks have dealt with that issue and have perhaps come up with some good workarounds to, you know, to help maintain contact with beneficiaries, you know, we'd appreciate it if you'd say something in the comment box, and we'd be glad to share that information. But I'm sure that is a common issue. I appreciate your question. Thank you.
And as a reminder, that is star one to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Lauren Womack with Lafayette Business and Career Solutions Center.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering, I've been asking this question through the EN service a lot, and it's a little bit unrelated, but I'm starting to get concerned that I haven't gotten a response. We submitted our signed TPA agreement, and we haven't received it back. I was just wondering if that's the case with everybody, that they just haven't been mailed out yet, or if ours got lost in transition somewhere.
You know, with all the respect, since that isn't a question about the survey, I'm going to refer this to Social Security, how, you know, y'all prefer to respond at this point.
Yeah, okay, this is Carol Cohen, and would you just email me, carol.cohen@ssa.gov, and I'll check on it. It's
okay, I apologize, because, yeah, I've just been emailing like crazy and calling, and I haven't gotten a response. So it's Carol.
Well,
Oh,
please send me an email. Please tell me who you've been emailing and calling like crazy. I want to know that, too. Carol. Carol?
Yes.
C-A-R-O-L dot Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, at ssa.gov.
Thank you very much. And another thing, on the surveys, is there anything where we ask the beneficiaries if they see, have, you know, a suggestion on a way that ENs can improve anything, you know, maybe collaborating more with them to better serve them? Because I am a person with disabilities who runs the Ticket to Work over here. So, you know, I try to collaborate with my clients, and sometimes they're able to point things out to me. I mean, everybody's got a different disability. But someone who has a visual impairment may tell you better ways to serve them, you know, that you might not have think about. And, you know, just inviting them to partner with you. I mean, we all say that's what we do, but sometimes they need to hear it. So that's just a little helpful tip. And I was just wondering if there was anywhere on the survey that invited them to just write something on there that could be reported.
Well, you know, again, the one open-ended question that we have in the questionnaire, and a number of folks responded, again, more than 3,000. Mm-hmm. We shared, you know, sort of the themes that were most prominent and kind of passed along comments that tend to occur, you know, more often than others. So if I didn't mention it in the briefing, it doesn't mean that we didn't get any comments along those lines.
Okay.
It's always gratifying that giving people the opportunity to make suggestions. And we get comments from people who are very satisfied with the program. So it's mm-hmm. not just people who are dissatisfied. And, you know, we, again, we pass along, you know, the quantitative as well as the qualitative when the report goes into Social Security.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And as a reminder, that is star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from Paulette Narr with State of New Jersey.
Yeah, hi. This is related to unassignment of tickets. As of August 17th, I believe, of this year, Social Security sent out an email to all of the ENs saying that they wanted individuals to fill out an online unassignment form. Has everyone gotten that? And my concern was we do have individuals who don't have access to computers or faxes because it says on there that the form can be mailed or faxed to Social Security, and I had some concerns about are we relying on the clients to indicate that they wanted to unassign their ticket. I just don't understand the purpose of that extra step. I don't know if you have any feedback on that.
Go ahead, Mel.
Hi, it's Melanie with Social Security. So when we sent that notice out, the process hasn't changed in terms of the information that's required when a beneficiary does unassign the ticket. The one thing that was different was that we are now asking them to include the reason for why they unassigned their ticket. But the form that we included that was posted on the website that took you there from the link, that's not required. That's more so of just a template to show you all of the information that's required. So, you know, you can use that one if it's easier or as long as we have the information that is included in the template. We just need those reasons, you know, for other purposes when it comes to disputes.
So, sometimes I'm contacted by phone. An individual wants to unassign their ticket. In most cases, the case has been closed or they've moved out of state, and that's why they're asking us mm-hmm. to unassign the ticket for whatever reason when we close the case or we've lost contact with the client and we're unaware that they had left the state or, you know, the counselor didn't follow up to close out the case after losing contact after a certain period of time. So usually I would just go ahead and there's no dispute they want their case closed. They're not getting services from us anymore. Are you saying that you want us to fill out or send you that information in some way? Because usually I've just been going into the portal and just unassigning the ticket.
Are you with VR or EN?
I'm a VR.
Okay. Felix, the process for VRs may be slightly different than what was referenced in that form. Do you want to take that one?
Yes, thank you. This is Felix Stump. I'm with the Maximus and the TPM. It is different, and it sounds like what you're doing by just going to the portal and putting in the case closure date is exactly mm-hmm. what we need. The additional information we're asking from the beneficiary, kind of what we in Social Security are trying to get at is to learn a little bit more about when a beneficiary initiates an unassignment, why they're choosing to do that, and try to learn what we can about if we see any trends or anything that we should be taking note of. And in your case, it is a different process because you're the service provider, but it's even different still as a VR because if you have someone that you've lost touch with and they request that their case be closed and you just go ahead and close their case, that's a kind of a different process, and that's not something that we need a whole lot of information about.
Okay, because, you know, I have been just usually it's been an out-of-state thing. Sometimes it's a case that was closed, and for whatever reason, the ticket is still assigned to us, so I'm just going ahead and doing it.
Yep.
What I was doing was I do send them a letter, and I check off a box in my letter to them stating why they called me but it's just an informational thing that I'm giving to the beneficiary. I wasn't closing that form because I just really wasn't sure about what that form was all about, and some of our clients don't have computers for us to direct them there. So that's just an informational gathering kind of a thing. As long as we're doing what we need to do, I'm really just leading the beneficiary there or sending them the form with, you know, and it's self-explanatory what to do and leaving it at that. That's okay? Or you're occasionally we will have someone who says, I don't want you to sign my ticket. We do occasionally get beneficiaries that will do that. They
right.
want services from us, but for whatever reason, whatever their rationale is, they don't want us to assign their tickets. For some reason, they think that means Social Security won't know if they're working. I have no idea. So we will get those on occasion. So far, I haven't come across those. So far, it's a clear-cut case of we should just go ahead and unassign the ticket. They're not getting services from us anymore. They're out of state. They've wandered off. Their case should have been closed. Their case is closed. But in the case when someone is in the middle of services and decides for whatever reason they want their ticket unassigned, then how does a VR handle that?
And that is the one thing that was updated. So if you're using that form as a reference or you have in the past and you share with the beneficiary the information that you need, that's the additional field that was added to the form, was just the reason for the unassignment, and I believe we're now asking for the phone number as well just so we can contact that beneficiary and we have it in one place.
So you want us to fill that form out and send it to you?
It's not
How are you getting that information? Because like I said, I just go into Social Security, unassign the ticket, and there's two boxes for me to check. It was a successful rehab or it wasn't. That's all I'm doing on my end.
Right, and that's fine on your end. I was just referencing, I thought you had mentioned that in the past you would share with the beneficiary the information that they needed to include, and so the only thing that's additional now that has been included on that form is the reason for it. So if you were using that as a guide, then, you know, if you're gathering that information, whether it's for your purposes or, you know, they're sending it in, that was just the only thing that changed. That's it.
Yeah. I used to create my confirmation letter for the claimant. I used that form and just if whatever they told me over the phone, I just check off that box. But I give it to them. That's their information. I'm not sending that to Social Security or anything. But I was printing out that form in PDF format and enclosing it in my envelope with my cover letter with sort of a FYI, fill this out for Social Security and mail it to them or fax it to them, but I just leave that up to them. That's what I'm saying. But for my letter, for my purposes, just to confirm with them, it's just so I can just check off a box and say, you contacted me, you wanted your letter, you wanted it unassigned, this is why I unassigned it. It's something that they can use, keep for their records, show to Social Security if they need to or whatever, or show to the new EN or wherever they go. That's all I'm doing with that.
That's fine.
Okay.
Operator, do we have another question?
Oh, we do. Our next question comes from Susan Webb with Abilities 360.
Hello, everyone. My question is about, every year, when we get these results, it's always really informative. But every year, the big problem is that employment networks are not helping them get their job. They're saying that the beneficiaries are saying, no, I got my own job. And that's historically been the case. I've been in employment network since 2002. But I think there's a problem with that question, because we even tell them in a 2.5-hour orientation where we go over all the services and all the trainings that we provide, which is very extensive, that ultimately, yeah, they are going to get their job. They are the one that's going for the interview. We give them job leads and so forth. We teach them how to find jobs on their own. We help them with their resume, their cover letter on each and every application if they want that help. And yet, very often it's no, I got my job myself. Well, of course, we don't go and hold their hand. So I think that question may need, and somebody else I think said something earlier, and I think it really needs to be more specific about what it means for an EN to help me get my job. They aren't associating all of the stuff and all the guidance and all the classes and all the stuff we do with them as getting them a job.
Susan, you know, it's an excellent comment, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of folks on the call feel the same way. You know, from my perspective, you know, and as we heard from Mel at the onset, you know, this year's survey is in the books. The opportunity which each, you know, successive edition gives us is a chance to reassess the questions that are asked and how they're posed. And so, it's an excellent comment. I would, you know, obviously, you know, we'll defer to Social Security with respect to, the design of that next survey edition, you know, whenever, you know, that edition is going to be, done. So, but it's an excellent comment. I really appreciate you taking the time to bring it to the fore.
Well, this isn't the first time, okay? It's been year, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Well, I was just saying that this isn't a new issue, and I started out by saying every single year this happens. And, maybe there are a lot of ENs that aren't doing much with helping people get jobs, but I can't imagine that. That's what we just – But I do know from my own personal experience of being an EN for 15 years that we do get a lot of that from consumers. Well, I got my job on my own. And yeah, you did, because we taught you. We gave you the job leads. We gave you all the tools so that you could get that job. But when you look at the way the question is given to them on the survey, it doesn't translate the same way. So you got my comment for what it's worth. Hopefully, like you say, next year that'll be taken into consideration. But it hasn't been thus far in all the years we've been doing this.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Good to hear from
you. Thanks, Susan, very much, really.
All right. Yeah.
And, Mike, do you want to take one more? We're right at our time. Do you want to take one more question before we close out?
In for a dollar, Mel. I'm good. Go ahead.
We'll take one more question, Leanne.
And our next question comes from Mary Glandon with Lambda Job.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
I have two comments. So in regards to the survey question, satisfaction with the information my employment network gave me about other resources and organizations to help me reach my employment goals, I've tried to reach out to other agencies, employment network, and the way the program is designed, it sets us up as competitors. So it's really hard for us to collaborate with other agencies. Does that make sense?
Well, it may make sense. I understand what you're saying. I'm not sure that, it's a universal truth. It may be, you know, a situation that you're experiencing. I'll open it up for any Social Security comments or anyone else on the call wants to respond.
This is Felix, again with TPM. Mary, I think you also entered a question in the chat, and you had a second part of that about, for example, if your client needs to be referred to the Volk Rehab system, then your source of revenue is gone. I can say that isn't necessarily true, because there is, whether or not you are operating in a state or the particular state where you're in question, whether that VR actively engages in a lot of partnership plus activities with the ENs that are there, even if not, there is still, if you've built a relationship with that client and they go to the VR and they get what they need, it is true that that case is closed successfully. You may have fewer payments available to you, but the revenue stream is not entirely closed off. There are still many payments on the table for that client that you might still have access to. So I did want to address that one part of your question that you typed earlier. And I think Mike's right. The ease with which you find you're able to partner with other ENs is probably very environmental and based on the types of services you are offering versus what other ENs are offering that you're reaching out to. And if the case is that you're offering very similar things and your services overlap, it might be that there isn't a whole lot of opportunity there. But I can say firsthand that there are many ENs that have found great success partnering with other organizations that either offer services they do not, or have access to clients that they do not, or for whatever reason, find that they've got complementary services or situations where partnering makes sense. I mean, I've talked with ENs that go out of their way to partner with other employment networks and build one another up and don't necessarily look at it overall as a zero-sum game. I think sometimes when it comes down to the individual beneficiary level or the client level, it might be that by partnering you lose out on some revenue for that individual. But I know a lot of ENs have found that overall those partnerships generate, on the whole, greater results for both organizations.
Okay. And
I know we have.
Reaching...
No, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Mean, it may be true. Like, I've tried reaching out to other ENs, like Best Buddy, because they offer specifically help for individuals with intellectual disability, and they just shut us down and said that we're not interested in partnering.
So rather than trying to reach out. Rather than specifically getting into the struggles you've had with specific ENs, why don't we take it offline? We can have someone follow up with you and kind of try to work with strategies on developing your partnerships. That is something that we offer at Maximus CPM. So we can work with you on helping you to identify other options or to come up with strategies of ways that partnerships might make sense for you.
Sure.
Does that
sound
all right?
I'm just specifically commenting to the survey question as
sure,
the reason
sure.
why people
wanna...
would find that we're not helping.
That makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And, Mike, before we close out, if people have additional survey questions, I wasn't sure if in the presentation anywhere or if you included an email address for them to send their questions to if we didn't get to them today.
Whatever works for you. Do you want to the questions to?
Just like in the Gov Delivery, if you have any questions, email them to programintegrity@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And I can type that in chat as well.
Thank you, Jenny.
Yep. So, folks, who
okay, and with that,
to...
we are about 5 minutes over, so we wanted to thank you again for joining us today. Jenny is putting the email address in there if you have additional questions. Everybody have a great day, and thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate your questions and your attentiveness.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.